the reason these disturbances, they followed you to a new home, is because it's not the house that's haunted. It's your son.
So 1,100 men went in the war. 316 men come out. The Sharks took the rest June the 29th, 1945. Anyway, we delivered the bomb.
Never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
You get another beer, you want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, shit. Oh.
My name is Robert Hawkins. Approximately 7 hours ago, something attacked the city. You found this. If you're watching this, then you know more about it than I do.
California, stay away from me. Stay away from me. I'll come in here. John Doe has the upper hand.
And on that day, Ahab will go to his grave, but he'll rise again within the hour. He will rise and beckon that all save one shall follow.
They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you!
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going, my friend?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Can't complain, I guess. And Connecticut American?
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how's it going?
It's going really good. I'm a little jamming busy, but it's going great. Thanks.
Excellent. And from the Commonwealth of Virginia?
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how's it going?
Going well.
Excellent. As long as we're not talking about The Stand, I think everything's going pretty good.
Yes.
Yes. All right. So who we are, for folks who've just stumbled upon us, we are actually the Dark Discussions podcast, which is part of the Dark Discussions News Network, which is www.darkdiscussions.com. Basically, we are a all news website on genre things. So movies, TVs, video games, whatever. Basically, the website is updated daily with release notices, columns, articles, interviews, podcasts, all sorts of things. So if you're a fan of genre and genre news, darkdiscussions.com should be one of the sites that you check daily. We're also always looking for columnists and other podcasters. So if you do a podcast, a genre podcast, and you're trying to find a home, we're always looking to have more podcasts added. We have like 30 or so right now. And then, of course, if you're like to write, if you wanted to review movies or Blu-rays or screeners or columns about horror or science fiction or Star Trek or whatever, we're always looking for writers as well. And you can always contact us at darkdiscussions@aol.com or go to darkdiscussions.com and press the contact us form, and basically that opens up an email so you can contact us. Also, we do have a Patreon, so Patreon is where you can donate to the podcast. The podcast and the website are fairly expensive, especially the big changes within the past 6 or 7 months. So, for example, if you donate $5 to the podcast, you get to choose a possible topic for us. And if you have $15 per month, you would get a chance to choose 3 topics for us. So basically what happens is if you donated $15, you would be able to say, I want you guys to do North by Northwest, Friday the 13th, and Scream, or you could just say Scream 3 times. And what happens is those go into a figurative hat where every quarter, so January 1st, April 1st, and so on, we pick out of that spreadsheet/hat randomly, and whatever's picked, we do an episode on. Last week, we just released Candyman, which was a episode based off of one of these Patreon picks. Two ways to go to Patreon is patreon.com/ Dark Discussions, or just go to darkdiscussions.com, and on the right there's a big icon that says Patreon, and just press that. And that's pretty much all the house cleaning I got here. I assume we have some news and things we've seen and whatnot that we'll talk about later. But Chrissy's back. She's been away due to the holidays and various other activities. Welcome back, Chrissy. It's good to hear from you, talk to you.
Thank you. And should I just make this announcement now, too, that I'm going to be on a little hiatus. I'm coming back for our 10th anniversary on March 11th, but I will be back with Dark Discussions on May 1st. I have a number of really exciting writing projects on my plate. And being that COVID has changed my daily environment at my day job, there is too much to juggle. So I can't give Dark Discussions the time and intention it really needs right now. So I'm just going to take a couple months and just get this other stuff off my plate, which is all very exciting, but I really need to have the focus to do that. And then I'll be able to come back fresh in May with a clear head and not be so overwhelmed and not be able to, you know, because I like to really spend a lot of time with these films and with the guys. And I can't do that if my head is in 50 million different places. So I'm just going to take a break, but I will be back. So no worries.
Excellent. It's good that you'll be back. Also, a couple of things that Chris mentioned. One was she will be back for the 10th anniversary of the podcast and network. We've been around since 2011, and March 12th is the 10th anniversary, and we're going to be recording on a Thursday night of the 11th, so she'll be back for that episode. And also, this month, for Woman of Horror Month, she has a big written interview that's going to be up on the darkdiscussions.com website, where you'll be able to see that. That's coming out before the end of February, so look out for that as well.
Yeah, and thank you for including me in that, Phil. I'm very excited, and I'm excited to read the other interviews by the other people that I know you interviewed, so I'm kind of excited. Yep.
Yeah, we got about six people so far, so getting the responses back from the emails, and then they'll all be put up as soon as I get them, and 24 hours later, probably. So, yeah, excellent. All right, so I think that's pretty much all we got. Let me just ask Mike and Barrett, do you guys have anything? Mike, do you have anything that you wanted to bring up before we begin?
No, I don't think there was any news off. Well, I mean, there. Well, let me think.
I mean, if it's news and stuff like that, we can, you know, bring it up at the end, I guess. But I thought maybe there's any necessary things that you needed to bring up immediately.
No,
before.
Not that I can think of.
Fair enough, not a problem. What about you, Barrett? Same or?
Same.
Okay, not a problem. All right, so today is February 11th. 2021, 3 days before Valentine's Day, for folks who are curious, such as listener Pam, that want to know when we record, because, for example, the Candyman episode that was released last week actually was recorded early December, and we released it in February, and some of them come out almost immediately the next week or even the next day, but others sometimes may take 1 or 2 months later, so it's just for people's perspective. All right, so I think we can get into our episode tonight. So, Mike, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight we're going to be discussing the Shudder exclusive The Cleansing Hour.
In the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, I command you to give me your name. He's gone!
Cut. Nice job, everybody. Good job.
I gotta take. Man.
Fallen monitors, let me lead.
All right, everybody, here we go. 3, 2.
Time to go off script.
That's right. The Cleansing Hour. It is technically a film that was made in 2019 that did the festival runs for a good year and a half before Shudder picked it up. And it is now, I guess, what Mike calls a Shudder exclusive, which is that's true. And the film is actually getting fairly good reviews on places like Rotten Tomatoes with around 72%. It is, I promised Eric this, Cleansing Hour, not Cleansing Hour, because I keep on screwing that up.
But the cleaning room, which is what it says on the...
you're right, on the... On the Skype.
Skype.
Yes, I screwed that up too. No wonder why I couldn't find it for a while there. The film, co-host Eric, who can't make it tonight because he is a little under the weather, wanted me to state that this is a top 10 film of 2021 for him, and he actually had it rated so on his top 10 list. You can listen to that episode that came out a couple weeks ago, and shortly there's going to be an article on the darkdiscussions.com website with all the films that we chose as the best of 2020. This film was directed by The Cleansing Hour. Was directed by Damien Levesque, or Levesque. I think it's Levesque. It appears that he co-wrote it with Aaron Horowitz. It stars Ryan Guzman and Kyle Gallner as the main leads, as well as Alex Angelis. And Alex is a woman, not a man. And then there are a number of other folks as well. Most people who saw the film through the Facebook groups and social media groups that we've been members of has said it was a pretty good film. Myself and I think you, Chrissy, too, hadn't seen this one yet. So it's new to us. But Mike, I know you'd seen it. I know you had seen it too, Barrett. So let's get into our thoughts on this film. So let's start with you, Chrissy.
Okay. I, at first, initially, and I'm going to really try hard to do this without spoilers, adored this movie. I was having such a blast with this. I thought it was really creative. I thought it was a really fresh idea and really tapped into current fears with, you know, what we see online, the whole idea of can we believe what we see on social media channels, especially on things like TikTok and, you know, all of these things that have sort of become very prevalent in, especially in the pandemic in the last year or so. I really enjoyed that there was a very strong friendship that was built there, that the characters had development, that there was backstory. I thought that the special effects were really good. And I appreciated the fact that the gore was well done. It was enough to be gory, but not enough to be such a gross out that you were like, all right, that's enough. So there was so much that I liked about this. And the only thing, but then as the story kind of progressed and got toward the end of the movie, it almost felt like it changed into a different film at the end. And I did have a couple of problems with some of the artistic and story choices that were made, which I'll discuss. But I mean, overall, this was fun. It was light, good time fun. I will probably forget about it, though. I don't think it's going to be one of those movies where I'm going to be raving about it, screaming and yelling, going, everybody needs to see this. I just think if you have Shudder, you're looking for something different that's just really entertaining, that'll turn your brain off, this is it. And this is what this movie did for me. I really enjoyed it. Like I said, technically, I had some issues with it. But as far as just enjoying the ride, it was fun. So anyway.
All right, sounds good. Very good. Let's go with you, Mike.
Yeah, I watched this in my annual binge, December binge. I watched this with Scare Me, and it was a really good evening of a double feature. Both films ended up on my top 10 list for the year. And then I just finished rewatching it, Abe Spinney style, before we started. Doing a rewatch, and I was happy to see it. For me, I think it still held up, and I don't think there's anything that the film does that is singularly exceptional. I think it does everything it needs to do very well in terms of the direction, in terms of the effects, in terms of a lot of the writing. I really enjoyed it. I liked the ending. I can see how Chrissy may not. But I think that it really is a very entertaining film from beginning to end for me. Like I said, yeah, there are things you don't want spoiled. But I think it's just, I don't think it's something that reinvents the wheel. And it might be for some people very forgettable because of that. You know, it doesn't have, it has twists to it, but they're not like your M. Night Shyamalan, ooh, I never saw that coming kind of twists. They're twists that kind of make sense within story context and within, you know, the character's backstory. And that worked for me. It kept it simple and it did it effectively. So.
Now, Mike, I have a quick question for you. Did you like this better than that Korean film, The Call, that we mentioned, that we watched a couple of weeks ago?
Ooh, God. I don't know. I really don't know. I think this was more fun.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, because it's in English, it's more rewatchable for me.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, so there's that, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a better film. I think both of them would have been, because Cleansing, I think, was somewhere around like 6 on my list, and probably The Call would have been somewhere around that same neighborhood. So they're probably on par.
Yeah, Cleansing Hour, Cleansing Hour was number 5 for you. Number 5.
Okay. Yeah. And The Call probably would have been in the top 10 and high enough in the top 10 that, yeah, I don't know if it would have beat it out or not. And at that point, you're splitting hairs.
Fair enough. Yeah, I was just curious. Yeah, because those both of those films were films at the very end of the year that a lot of us that put our top 10 list together didn't have time to see. And I was just curious. All right, sounds good. All right, so for me, I actually tried to watch this about 2 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago, even before we were doing the episode, when it started popping on people's best of year lists, I was just curious. I go, oh, that's a film I missed. And I didn't really get to pay attention, but the first 15 minutes, so I wasn't really a fan. And then it seemed kind of like cheesy rather than regular Grindhouse. Obviously it was picked as an episode, so I decided to watch it, obviously, and I did it last night. And, I think it's a really good film. I was surprised. Once I got over some technical issues like CGI and even some funny lines that the quote-unquote villain were saying, once I got over all that, I was fine. I mean, you know, I still love 1950s sci-fi, The Outer Limits, and you know, the graphics of films and TV shows from yesteryear don't even, you know, aren't really that good compared to today, and I still can do suspension of disbelief. So I was able to still do suspension of disbelief for this film as well. I did have one issue. I felt that the movie should have ended when a major famous person is killed, and it should have just gone to black right then. But then they had this little weird 2-minute coda after, and I didn't think that was necessary. So if the movie had ended 2 minutes earlier, I think it would have been a much better film. But even with that extra 2 minutes, you know, it is what it is, and the film is still a really good film. Acting solid. Direction was solid. The writing was good. As Chrissy mentioned, it has a lot to say about what we see on TV or on the internet and what people may or may say to us. And, you know, it's not all what they say it is. And so I think there's some commentary there, too, besides just being a midnight movie. Thumbs up. And I would have put this on my top 20 for sure, and there's a really good chance it would have been on my top 10 too, because my last handful on my top 10 weren't as strong as the beginning, and this film is as good as anything at the near bottom of my top 10. Barrett?
Yeah, I was just kind of looking through Shudder one day recently and decided to watch it, and it was a really good film. I really enjoyed it. It's not perfect, but it's fun, and it kept me engaged through the whole thing. And it definitely would have been in my top 10. I'm not sure exactly where. Probably would have beat out Fantasy Island. So, anyway, yeah.
that stuff.
All right, so it seems like everybody pretty much liked the film, flaws or not. Everybody thought it was a pretty solid horror film. The three of us, and Eric as well, said we would have even put it on our top 10 had we seen it. Obviously, Chrissy didn't participate in the top 10 because of all her writing and stuff that she had outside, but obviously she seemed to like it as well. All right, so let's get into, I guess, a wiki. Who wants to do a wiki? If not, I got it right here. But anyone? Anyone?
I'll do it.
All right, Barrett's there. All right.
Another
wiki.
Successful exorcism streamed online, or so it seems. Can the Exorcist producer and their team bring the ratings up? Ratings skyrocket when a real demon gets involved.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. The wiki, obviously, or IMDb, gives it a little giveaway with the mentioning the demon. But I mean, if you watch the trailer, you know it's a demon anyway.
I think it's pretty obvious from the setup, right? Because you start out with a fake exorcism, and you know very quickly that it is a fake exorcism, and then there are things going on that are weird, you know, and they're making a movie of it. So I wonder what the twist is going to be. So yeah, I don't think that's really spoiling much. I think the audience is way ahead of the script there.
Yeah, that's a fair point, Mike. Yeah, I mean, unless there was going to be like some sort of serial killer or whatnot, but you figure if they're going to focus on a fake exorcism, what happens if a true exorcism suddenly appears when it's unexpected? So I would concur there. Now, Chrissy, we'll start with you, because before we throw out the spoiler, you know, there's things we can talk about before we do that. Because, again, Dark Discussions is not just a review site. We also review, but we critique as well. Now, Chris, you mentioned stuff about what we see isn't necessarily real, and social media and television and all that. Obviously, that's big in the news today. You know, we have all these, you know, the Kardashians and whatever, and they've admitted offline that some scenes they have to not just improvise, it's actually scripted. And so it's not all, quote unquote, reality TV in a sense. And then, you know, you have your YouTube shows, you got the jokes online. You know, there's the milk jug joke where people would go into a grocery store and throw a milk jug and people would freak out and see them fall and stuff. It's just stupid stuff like that. So what do you got? You mentioned it. You know, or have better words for it than the rest of us.
Oh, well, I wouldn't say better words, certainly,
have the best words.
I have a lot of swear words, too. I can use those.
Those are the best ones.
They are the best ones. I would say that, honestly, this film to me stuck out on a couple of deeper levels. I don't know if this is what was intended, but I thought it was more, if you look at it on a deeper level, a commentary on the whole idea that what we see is not necessarily the truth, right? And it's not only about social media with faking these shows and doing hoaxes. It's also about the effect of social media on friendship. These guys had a connection, a very strong connection, a friendship since childhood. And when one of them betrayed him, it was kept from him. And so, you know, the one guy there, Drew, never knew. And what I find interesting about this was that I saw a parallel between some of the things that have been going on social media, like conversations on Facebook, friends breaking up over Facebook arguments, friends breaking up over Twitter posts, things like that, because all of a sudden they see a side of their friend, even if they've known this friend for, you know, 30, 40 years, whatever, that they've never seen before. And so this causes them to split. So I really felt what really impressed me about this movie was that this is really a commentary on a very subtle level of what is going on, not only in social media in terms of what's presented as context, but the effect of social media on bonds, you know, bonds between, you know, couples that are romantically involved, bonds among friends. That is really what the bonds among family, right? There's some family members in there too. I really felt that that's what this movie was really trying to say. And the fact that it sort of like plays out in a devil film, right? For lack of a better, or a demon possession film, is also very interesting. Because think about how heated we get when we're arguing on social media. Think of how swept up some people get when they're following a certain trend or a certain person, you know. And one of the things that I also loved about this, I don't know if you guys took the time to look at this, but what I found hysterical was when they would have the comments, particularly in the beginning of the movie, and you would see the scrolling comments of people making comments, right, on the show. That stuff was so – I actually paused the movie and read a lot of it. That stuff was so right on. I don't know who wrote that stuff. It was maybe the writers or if they had people just come up with it. But it was absolutely so real to and so indicative of what we would see on social media on these comments today. So that's what I really felt this movie was saying on a deeper level.
I caught a few here or there, like – priests still have a dick? I saw that was one of the comments.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah, I love one that says I'd fuck him in an LA minute. But like there was like a whole bunch of them. Like they were hilarious. I did not write them all down. But that alone, if you're willing to pause the movie for just a couple seconds and read some of those comments, it's totally hilarious because it is exactly what you see. I mean, it's not even like it didn't even feel fake to me. I was like, somebody just like went crazy and like knew what they were doing, knew what he was doing and wrote exactly what we'd see on something like this. I just really felt that that's what this movie was truly about. And I think it's very timely. And so even though this movie is light, entertaining, fun, because it is, and it's got some really fun twists in it. I really do think it has something to say. So that's it. Was that good, Phil? Did I do good?
Yeah, no, that is really good. Yeah. Unfortunately, they had weird coloring for the comments on the TV screen that they were showing. And also, they went way too fast. But if you paused it, you're right. You can see some really good stuff. Too bad they didn't have it go slow and in a better script. Because it's really significant, I think, like you said. And it makes – and that's the thing. If it's a serious situation or not even a serious situation, the rudeness and the things that people will say online, especially when they're anonymous – is absolutely amazing. And
there was one, and I forget where it was in the movie, but like apparently two commenters were attacking each other. And there's a whole section. It literally looks like stuff you'd see on Twitter, like where they're just being trolls and being nasty to each other and being like whatever. And yet you can tell they don't know each other because they address each other by – so they don't know each other in the real world. So that's in there too. So you need to, it's very subtle. And like I said, I was just like, dude, I just want to pause this and look at these comments. You're not going to miss anything if you don't watch these comments. It's just, they're fun. It just adds another level of why I think this is really a strong social commentary and not just a horror movie.
Sure.
Yeah. I think a lot of it, I mean, some of it is we reveal parts of ourselves online that maybe we shouldn't. And a lot of this is that their relationships would have been better off if the secrets had remained secret. This is not a thing where unburdening yourself is good for the soul for the most part. But yeah, it's, I think there's a lot. I think I liked how the characters are shaded. like the lead character of Max, there's a lot of douchey things about him, but there's also a lot of admirable things about him too. You mentioned the one friend betrays the other, but really the both of them betrayed each other.
Yeah, I would even argue which is the worst was Max's betrayal, which really isn't a betrayal. He just doesn't tell someone that he had a certain relationship with someone in the past versus someone who's stealing 70% of your money.
Right.
You know, I mean, so I would argue which is worse, and they're trying to make it as if the last one that was announced was the worst. And I'm thinking that's probably the least because it was had nothing to do with cheating or anything.
Yeah, they weren't even together yet when those two got together.
Right. Yeah. And, well, I think it's more the video that he held on to.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But even so. But
no, but I've been holding on to I'm going to spank it off to your fiancé. That, I think, the problem.
Well, that's the thing is that, first of all, the video is recorded willingly by both participants. And it's not like he's sharing it with anybody either, right? So it's not like the worst thing. It's just like, okay.
It's really freaking creepy, though. I mean, that's like, I don't think you'd want to know that any of your friends have like old sex tapes of your wife. You know, even if you knew they had a relationship, like you would think, okay, I'll delete that one.
But well, that's I see your point. I agree. I would have deleted it. But again, we're talking about a new age and a new generation and how they think. It's like, you
know,
because. Or not, right, exactly. And so it's like these people are, okay, so we had a relationship in the past. We did these stupid videos, and, okay, I still have them. And now you're dating and actually a fiancé to someone else that I'm friends with and whatnot. But, again, you could look at it as there's no harm because it was all in the past, and even if he does have the video. So I don't know. It depends. You know how it is. It's
stealing the money, though, is pretty bad.
Was that again?
Stealing the money is pretty bad.
Oh, that was, yeah, that's really bad.
Well, and he rationalizes it too, right? In that he does all the work.
I deserve that money.
Yeah, I deserve the money. But that's how people think, right? It's people steal, not like, well, I'm going to take this thing that person worked hard for because I'm just too lazy to get a job. You know, that's not what people. People are not honest with themselves when they do shitty things.
Right. You know? And even when you do a shitty thing like that, or you don't like the money situation, you talk about it. You don't just do it without what other people not knowing, right? Because then you're stealing. And you can justify it all you want, but it doesn't matter. You're stealing.
Right.
But continue, Mike.
I think that's – I really think, you know, it's two ways. But this is a thing – and forgiveness, though, is also a part of it, right? And they do forgive each other, and that also is an important part of it, or at least claim to forgive each other.
Sure.
So, yeah, but I think all of this, right? And, of course, it also brings the fiancé into this, Lynn into this as well, because when we meet her, we know she doesn't like Max. We don't know why, but he's such an obvious kind of womanizer and a phony that it's easy to think that that's just why she doesn't like him.
Right.
You know, the idea that they could have left that part of the story out and it wouldn't have seemed odd.
Right.
You know, but the fact I did kind of like that they brought it back. And it was consistent with what has been established of the character. So I liked that. I liked a lot of these things. I liked, you know, that the niece, Samantha, I think was her name.
Riley.
Oh, Riley. Okay. So when she comes on and she is a little bit clueless, but she's not completely incompetent. And she actually does contribute to the story. She is not like just the, you know, blonde bimbo airhead who's there because her uncle works on the set. You know, she has some background knowledge that they can use later on in the story. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I did too. I thought they were going to go there where they were going to just use her as someone that for people to hit on, or she was going to be a screw up or something. But in reality, she's just a typical 20 something bozo, but doesn't mean she's stupid or whatnot. It just means she's 20, something bozo, 20 something bozo. But yeah. But she's trained. She's got the schooling, and yeah, so she knows what she's doing. I thought that was pretty good. All right. So anything else we wanted to bring up before we throw up the spoiler? There could be other topics that we could bring up before we throw up the spoiler, where we will critique and review various parts of the film. Anyone? All right. So I guess we'll throw up the spoiler. And then we'll set up the story, and then we can talk about everything and anything. So the spoiler is up. So there's two friends, Max and Drew. They run a YouTube show about exorcism called The Cleansing Hour. A live stream thing. Pretty much YouTube stars. Like anybody can be somewhat of a star now if you do something on YouTube. And since their stuff is both outrageous and, a charismatic lead, it draws a large number of folk. Basically, Max plays an exorcist on the show, and Drew is the computer and camera guy behind the scenes. And basically, I don't know if it's a weekly episode or a monthly show or whatever, but whatever it is, they do exorcisms every week, basically an hour show, and Max exorcises demons from the victims. And they have a running thing where they get T-shirts and you pay extra money and you can see certain things and all, on and on and on. Signature, autographs, the whole bit. And so they got a good amount of money coming in every week from viewership and whatnot. And but the thing is it's just reality TV. It's not real. Everybody's an actor. And that's pretty much it. And off screen, Max is a guy that the chicks like. In real life, the actor was a model prior to becoming an actor, and you can see why. He's a pretty good looking guy. Got the Tom Cruise muscles, the whole bit. So it's believable that women would throw themselves at him. Obviously, these women are, and the people that watch the show are too dense to understand that being a priest, he isn't supposed to be with anybody, and he's doing karaoke in bars and whatnot. But again,
that is I'm pretty sure that is not forbidden.
That's true. You're right. It's probably it is not.
Yeah,
karaoke. Yeah. But it's just kind of the whole thing's funny, and that's pretty much the setup, right? I mean, that's the setup. Anything anybody want to add?
Well, first, I have to say, when this movie opens, there is such a sense of humor about this whole cleansing hour thing. The cheese factor is just fantastic. I don't know how many listeners are still are out there that remember, but my husband used to have a TV show on A&E, and it was, short-lived, but it was back in the time when, all of these ghost hunting shows were hot. And just the way that they put this show together with the prayer clause and like the cheesy, poses of, like the priest, he's all posing, and like, it's just like, oh my God, like I was cracking up. I just thought that was delightful. And then that theme song was absolutely crazy. Did you guys catch the theme song a little bit later?
No, I don't think I did.
Oh my God, they do a theme song for the YouTube show. You see it.
Nice. I'll have to re-listen to it when I see it. Maybe I'll use that.
When they go in to film her, like the girl, when they do Lane and she's the girl, remember she kind of fills in for the one that doesn't show up?
Right.
They show you their theme that introduces the show.
Oh, okay.
And it's like the cheesiest thing you've ever seen. Like, it's great. And the whole, designing the merch and then sign my prayer cloth. And I mean, it was just so well done. I think that was part of the fun of this, was that it was just a cheese fest. And like, I don't think that, I know there's a lot of cheesy stuff on the internet right now, but this was really a hearkening to the ghost hunting shows of the mid-2000s. It was just – that was what it reminded me of. And so whoever did that, I loved that. I have to give them really high points for pulling that off because to me it was very obvious.
You know? I just don't get how you do an exorcism show every week. You know, anyone who listens to the podcast probably knows that The Exorcist is my wife's favorite movie, so we end up watching it like once a year. How could you every week turn into just to the power of Christ compels you? It's, you know, the same basic thing we've seen. There's not a whole lot of originality when it comes to exorcisms. I think actually some of it, that's part of it, right? Is that there are people tuning in because they're hot, right? And there's not, because it's the hot priest. And I think they all were watching it, a lot of them, for superficial reasons, not because they necessarily believed what was going on.
Right.
That actually may be true. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I watch Laura Vitale. She's a great cook and has great recipes, but she's easy on the eyes on YouTube. So that helps. So you're absolutely right, Mike. I could see people just jumping on board because Max is a good looking guy. Barrett, you going to say something?
I was saying the same thing. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, that's how they're hooking people, and the way they would do the difference is whoever's, you know, possessed, they can do different ways of having them possessed or whatever. That would be how they'd mix it up a little bit, I guess. But otherwise, yeah, it's the same thing. They're exorcising a demon.
Right. There's even a little joke between the two of them where Drew says to Max that, yeah, you know, you got groupies, you know, and so you have your regular viewership that are a woman checking them out. But you're right. Yeah, they could change it up where they have a hot chick as the one that's possessed, or it could be, you know, twins. I mean, you know, who knows? You know, they could just mix and match it up and whatnot. I mean, I wouldn't be interested in watching the show. I mean, it would kind of be boring to me. I mean, I can't even do online conventions. I think they're the most boringest thing ever. So, you know, but people could do these things and get a kick out of it. So, you know, maybe that's what it is. But I think you do have a good point there, Mike.
Well, I do think that also is something that let's. One of the things I do like about the film is that there's like six or seven viewer stories going on throughout the film, and they each have a little bit of a narrative of their own. You know, you got the kid. There's the Israeli couple. There's the Korean police officers, right? And so the kitchen group, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh yeah, and then the three kids in Omen, and yeah, the Korean, yeah, you know, the two Korean cops, the three kids in Omen that are trying to repair their motorcycle, the Israeli couple where their car broke down,
the groupies in the bar. But this is supposed to be,
and then the wealthy kid at the dinner table with his mom,
right? And this is supposed to be. The if you believe it, right? So either there is supposed to be a person battling evil and fighting for the soul of a human being. It's all bullshit, but that's the premise of the show, right? And it's what they sell the show on. And they're watching it as entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if this is a if they really, so either they're watching it as a distraction and don't believe it, which is problem one, right? I mean, I guess this is sort of like reality shows or professional wrestling when everyone knows it's fake, but they're perfectly fine just rolling along with it, thinking it's fake. Or they believe it's real, but they believe it's real and they're treating it as like the Kardashians, right? As, ooh, let's watch the hot priest battle the eternal forces of evil. That's just, it's just sort of weird to me that you would have that. So I think there is some criticism there, certainly of the viewers. I think that's part of it, or critiquing of them.
That's a fair point too, yeah. Because it's also who are the people that are watching this, and what does it say about them? So yeah, that's a fair point, especially when they know. Well, let me rephrase that. Especially when a lot of them are watching it, knowing that they don't believe what they're watching, but they watch it for whatever entertainment value it is, whether it's groupies, whether it's the exploitation, whether it is, you know, just something to drink beer and eat pizza with your buddies on a Friday night. So,
yeah. All walks of life, too, you know?
Right. I mean, I could see why the little kid was watching it, you know, the wealthy kid, because, you know, a 10-year-old or 15-year-old or whatever age he is, that would be something that could, may interest him, you know, because that's, you know, if you like monsters and whatever. The Israeli woman, I can only see her watching it because of Max. Why the Arab kids in Omen are watching it, I have no idea. Why the Korean cop is watching it, except...
What was it? We knew America was fucked, right? Wasn't that the comment?
Well, and see, I'm glad that you kind of brought that up, because that was one of the things I talked about technically that I really didn't like about this movie. I did not feel a connection with any of these people watching them. It felt really out of place to me. I understand that the writers may have been, like you guys said, making a comment about the people who actually watch this stuff and follow this stuff. But I kind of didn't get that. I thought that, you know, of course we see the two ladies in the bar, right? And of course one of them goes ahead and bangs the priest, and that's fine. And then she just becomes sort of this faceless person sitting in the bar. There's really no further discussion with that, and she sort of drops back into the crowd. And I kind of didn't like that. I would have liked it better. Oh, and then we get all these other people that we really don't have any idea who they are or why they're watching it or whatever. So if that was the comment they were trying to make, I don't think they did it well, because to me, these were just faceless people I didn't know. The other problem is, I think it would have worked out better if they wanted to make this type of comment, where instead of introducing all of these different people that were just literally token placeholders, like to me, they were just faceless washouts. Take that story of the girl who banged the priest and her friend and develop that. So as they're watching this, I do think the comment could have been made stronger and made the same way, you know, much better actually doing it that way. Because, okay, I know this is the girl who banged the priest. What is her and her friend's specific reaction to this? Because let's face it, we don't get a lot of reaction out of these random people. You get a shot of them going, ooh, or something, but you don't. And I understand, Mike, that it all comes back at the end, but that just didn't make sense to me. That's when it turned into a different movie for me.
Well,
I was
think
like, all
you
right,
need
what
that.
Is this trying yeah. to say? Like, I didn't like
I,
that.
I think you need that because it is audience participation, right? That is a part of the film. Is character reactions, character interactions with the show, like, you know, them hurting him when he's trying to kill himself. And it has to come around to the end. But I also think there's only so much they can. There are little stories that are there. Most of these characters are tuning in because they're bored, right? Yeah. You know, they're stuck in the middle of the desert, kids at the dinner table and being ignored by his parents. He has that moment where he's for understandable reasons, going to be talking about dinosaurs with his dad. And then dad has to go away on business. And disappointed that he can't talk about dinosaurs. The cop car, just, you know, the cop just sitting in the car, you know, waiting, biding time. But you can't spend too much time away with them, because I think it takes away from the main story.
And then the groupies too, right? They're just ogling, right?
Right. And I don't think, and there are little stories that go on with most of them. They're not huge stories. They're tiny little stories. They're not just people in a bar staring at them. There is a little bit of character there for most of it. It's just sort of like the comments that go by on the screen. If they go by too slowly and we can read them all, I think that pulls you away and pulls the focus away from the story and may make the narrative more disjointed, right? And isn't going to keep you focused on the thing you're supposed to be focused in on. And the focus of the story really is supposed to be about Max and Drew and Lynn.
I just didn't feel that those little stories, they were disruptive to me. I would have rather seen nothing, just me personally, and it's just opinion. I would have rather have seen nothing at all and keep it tight and keep that group audience out there anonymous, because, you know, that would have made another type of comment too, in that here these guys are doing this internet show. They don't even know who the fuck watches them. Like, which is exactly what goes on. These people are just their fans. The people that, you know, they don't really know them as people. So that's kind of another comment. But I do see your point, Mike. I totally do. I just thought, for me, it just didn't. I felt very disrupted by it. And
let
I
me
was
ask
like,
you this, Chrissy. If they didn't have it, would they have been able to do the ending where we see their reactions when they see the big reveal?
Well, see, that's the thing. I know Mike said he liked the ending, and I don't know what you guys think. I did not. That is at the moment when the movie felt like very. I understand how it connects to possibly the comment the movie's trying to make. You know, that we're all sort of brainwashed by this sort of social media troll-like behavior where we don't know what's real and what isn't, and where our real friendships fall apart because we're arguing about stupid crap on a screen. I get that. But to me, that's when the movie – it was almost like a shift in tone to me. And I was like, wait a minute, what is it? Like, I just couldn't – I don't know. For me, it just did not work. That doesn't mean that it sucks or anything. It was a disappointment for me.
I liked it, but I can see where you say it had a different tone. It definitely felt like a different tone to me when it turned to that point of it, but I liked it.
Yeah, I would concur. It definitely had a different tone at that point when we get the reveal at the end of what the film's really about, because the first first two acts, I guess, are more what you were saying, Chrissy, which is the commentary on social media and those who would watch such things, as well as the lies that our two leads have, or three leads for that matter, have been telling each other throughout. And then the third act, it's not only, I guess it's, if it's not tone, it's focus. It shifts focus away from them and to general things, I guess.
It felt like a locked room type of scenario, you know, where they could not leave because they were trapped in this room and they were telling each other the lies they had told. And then all of a sudden it's this huge scenario of affecting the world.
Right.
I agree. And that definitely, Barrett, that was kind of what affected me, too, because I was like, wait, I was sort of liking this, like, very claustrophobic story. And now all of a sudden it's everywhere. But I don't know. I think they're, yeah. But like I said, you know, it's just because I didn't like it doesn't mean it's terrible. It just didn't work for me. That's all.
No, and that's fair. That's fair. Exactly. I mean, can see how that shift in focus, never mind tone, could be an issue for some folks. All right, so where do we want to go next? What do we want to talk about? Let's just talk about how. All right, so they have the new exorcism coming. They hired an actor who appears to be a trans woman. For some reason,
because the idea is that it's something different. Right. That
okay.
It's this week we're going to have a drag queen or whatever. I've missed how exactly they categorize this particular person, but felt very drag queen-y to me. If it's not a drag queen, I apologize. And, you know, so that was it. It was, oh, that's the hook to bring people in because it is entertainment. That's all they cared about. And,
having a trans woman what did you call it?
I don't know. I don't think it was a trans woman. I think it was a drag queen. I think he literally was like, we want a drag queen, like, because it's supposed to be entertaining and shocking. And they want,
and
like,
and with the drag queen, you get a certain level of shock value, right?
Right.
And so, that's why he's disappointed when it's Lainey who's there, because she looks like just, you know, like every other girl that we've had, you know, she's just another, you know, Reagan from The Exorcist, you know, she's just another, you know, Jennifer Carpenter from The Last Exorcism, you know, fairly, she's very generic, and there really isn't much there to it in terms of an easy hook, you know. Think of it from the point of view of the Hollywood producers, who are like, we gotta remake this thing, but now, you know, now the equalizer is going to be a black woman instead of, you know,
right, right, or all female Ghostbusters,
or all female Ghostbusters, or right, you know, we're going to make remake Space Jam, but with Peter Dinklage this time, or something just like weird. They're going to do, because it's just some sort of weird hook, and they don't care about the substance. It's all about what is it going to look like on the poster. You know,
right.
What's the quick blurb you can throw out there? And possessed drag queen, like, people are going to go, oh, fuck, I got to see that.
Well, and the other thing, too, that we sort of like forgot to mention is that one of the things this story did really well, this film did really well in the opening, was the setup of the conflict. There are conflicts between Drew and Maxie, and even Maxie and Lane, over this show. And that's part, in order to understand why the drag queen is called in, you have to understand that there were, you know, they were what? They were arguing over, we're not getting enough viewers, this is getting old, like, and they're in conflict, they're butting heads. They butt heads because, you know, Maxie wants to go out boozing and drinking, and Drew's like, no, dude, I gotta go fill orders. You know, I got to go fill T-shirts and I got to fill prayer cloths, you know, and whatever, and do all that for you. Because who do you think makes all the money? You know, we have to sell all this stuff. So it's out of those conflicts. There's about three or four of them that Maxie and Drew are having over the direction of the show specifically, that kind of leads to Maxie saying, well, oh, my God, we got to get some flash in here. Let's get a drag queen, you know. And even Drew kind of gives him pushback on that and is like, why do we need to do that? Like, can we just do, you know what I mean? So they even have a fight about that. And so, you know, in any good story or any good film, you want to have conflict out of the gate, because a conflict that's unsolvable is what keeps the reader or the viewer interested to see how the they're going to solve it, right? So that, anyway, that is the whole reason that the drag queen got there, was because they were having arguments about the direction in which to take the show, and finally Drew just caves and says, all right, whatever, dude, I'll do it. But then, of course, the drag queen does not show up.
Yeah, the drag queen does not make it.
Yeah, yeah, she there's some sort of demon kills her. But yeah, it makes sense, though, because, yeah, I mean, even though Lane is a really good-looking woman, and a good-looking woman is going to drag in the male audience, it's still just another generic good-looking woman, right? I mean, it's not like Kate Upton or whatever. So it's like, Max has a good point, which is, and what you said earlier, Mike, is what would want make people want to watch the same thing over and over. And Max has a good point. He goes, let's have a different demographic in this case, an LGBTQ individual. And it makes sense. It would kind of bring it, and as you said, Mike, it's kind of schlocky, I guess, right?
Right. It's a rating stunt.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and since it's last minute, since they can't get the original individual that was supposed to be on the show, because that individual dies in the alley from a demon attack, Drew says, Lane, you take over, you fill in, and so it's a last minute replacement. There's nothing they can do, and if they don't go live, they're going to lose, you know, their audience for that evening. So Max agrees. Even though he's kind of upset because he and Lane don't have a good working relationship at the moment anyway, never mind the fact that the individual that was supposed to star as the possessed had learned all their lines prior, and now they're going to have to wing it. I'm right on that, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay. So.
And Max finds out, like, right on the spot almost.
Yes.
Like, it's well, and he finds out.
Yeah, and see, that's another thing too, that Drew kind of doesn't really, like, I think you're right, Mike, that Drew just thinks he is important, but he thinks he's more important. I do all the stuff behind the scenes. I'm the one that puts the merchandise together. I do all that. So he feels like he doesn't even have to tell Max that we're changing it at the last minute.
Well, right. And also, too, what's interesting is that it becomes such a part of Drew's identity, you know, and that's another comment where it sort of connects to the whole social media thing. you know, in that, you know, my identity is running this ridiculous show for you. My identity is how many, you know, hits we get. My identity is how much merch we're selling. And I think that's another interesting comment as well. And I hope we are going to talk about the special effects, because I do want to say I really thought the special effects in this were pretty decent, considering it was probably low budget, you know?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I think a lot of them are really good. Yeah, I think with the character of Drew, from his perspective, right, that Matt isn't doing shit. He goes, he parties, he gets drunk, he shows up at the last minute, films for an hour, and leaves.
So he's kind of justified in how...
Well, he feels he's justified. I have no idea what the contractual arrangements were beforehand. And he's getting what he wants out of it, because he's getting all the pussy he wants, right? And that's what he's looking for. That's all there is to his character, kind of, his goals. You know, he gives, like, the bullshit spiel about fighting evil, and at some point that may have been a thing for the character in real life. It's hard to say how much of his story is real and how much it is complete bullshit. But right now, he has no purpose in life other than living for the moment. And Drew is trying to get married. He's got bills to pay. He's the one keeping it all together. While Max is out there doing karaoke, he's sitting in hotel in his house putting together prayer cloths and bottles of holy water that to send to the people who buy them. So he's doing all this work while Max is living it up. And I'm not saying that he's right to be stealing from it, but I can certainly understand his perspective and why he's frustrated at that point.
And it's kind of weird too, because you figure if they're, depending on how big they are at that point, you figure they would have hired, you know, side people. I mean, you don't have to have one person of the two do all the merchandising. They could have just had someone else, you know, they could have hired a couple of people to do that, for crying out loud. So it's just weird that it's almost like, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me more Drew wasn't being overwhelmed because Max was lazy. It reminded me more that Drew didn't want to give up his parts in the project, because then he would feel that he's replaceable, because technically behind the scenes he's a replaceable. He's like the guitarist or the drummer in a band versus the lead singer.
Well, and that does tie into what I was just saying about identity as well.
But it's also, you know, a case
that's his identity is doing all this shit, you know?
Right. But it's also a case, like, they mentioned that for whatever, however many followers they have, and I don't even get me ask me about how monetization works on YouTube, because I have no idea, you know, what these people make. He's complaining that he hasn't gotten verified on Twitter yet, right? So they're not that big. And these things can explode very quickly, so they may have not had time to it. They still have bills they're paying. It doesn't sound like they're rolling in money. So however many followers they have versus having however many views they have, whatever the reality of the situation is in our world, in this world, they don't seem to be making a whole lot of money doing it. They're making enough to do okay, to be successful, but not necessarily to go be hiring that many more people either.
Yeah.
Yeah, that may be true.
Well, true, and the blonde girl is like an intern or something.
Right, she just got a job. Yeah. Right. Well, and that's why I laugh about, because she asked about getting paid, not understanding that, you know, intern.
Right. That's a good point. That's
an intern.
Yeah, I mean, I know some of those YouTube ones make a lot of money.
Yes.
I mean, I know, like, you know, Laura Vitale, Food Wishes. I watch a lot of those cooking shows, and some of them are big enough that they're pulling in huge sums monthly. And then a couple of news shows as well that I watch on YouTube, same thing.
But if you want to make money on YouTube, you don't need thousands of followers. You need many thousands. You need a whole lot more views than just a few thousand people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because they were at, how many was it, 11, 14 million? So that's huge. But
at the end,
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I know one show I watched that's an 8 o'clock show at night. I'm not going to name it because it's not necessary. Because it's a political show, and so some people may not like it, some other people may love it, and I don't need to hear that crap. But I know this guy, he pulls in like 80 or 90,000 views during the show. He does it 5 days a week, and he pulls in good money because he has this thing where, you know, if you donate a certain amount of money at the end of the show, he reads your stuff that people have posted in those little messages that you know Chrissy mentioned earlier for this show here on the cleansing room, and so they pull in big bucks at sometimes, and I'm watching as the show's going on. Some people are donating $50, some people are donating $1, some people are donating $30, and you know if you add that up, that's huge, you know, just for one night. So it's possible, you're right. I don't know if these guys don't have the Twitter check mark yet, then they're not as big as you know Laura Vitelli for cooking or this news guy that I'm talking about.
Right.
You know.
So and yeah, now everybody's googling news guy 8 o'clock.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh yeah. No, it's nothing controversial, but he's more of a opinion piece person than otherwise in a show where there's like 3 to 4 people. And it's not really it's centrist, but it's enough that he can piss off enough people that I don't need to hear him. Yeah. But they're all searching.
Or they're gonna get just stop. You don't want them to know.
Exactly. All right. So let's see. What do you guys think about the elimination of the various characters? Side characters. I was kind of bummed. I liked those characters.
Well, it's all Agatha Christie, right? The 10 Little Indians.
Yeah.
You always have to add in peripheral cast because we can't kill off our main cast until the end of the film, if we are going to kill them off at all. So we need to have someone to build up bodies.
That's true. I never even thought of that. They were there as the body count.
So, like, I loved, Chrissy, you talked about the makeup. I loved when they killed off the uncle with the fire.
Yeah, that was a cool.
Well, where he collapses on his niece's leg and he just leaves the goop.
Yeah,
on her thigh. It was just
brilliantly done. And like I said, not only well done, but gross, but not and gross enough to induce that, oh God, that toe curl that you want, right? But not overdone to the point where you're like, all right, now this is just really this is doing nothing for me. Because people don't realize that if you get too gory, like a lot of splatterpunk stuff, nobody cares. Like, you want people's toes to curl, and then you got to give them just enough, and then get out. Because otherwise, people get desensitized, right, and it just looks dumb. And then you're like, all right, whatever, dude, I'm over this. We've seen 25 minutes of this. And I think that one moment was perfect. It was the perfect length. It was the perfect amount of gross. And it just made me go, oh, God, and then we moved on. So that totally worked.
Right.
And it really looked real, too.
But it's also the fact that... But it's also the fact that it was the uncle, right, smacking his face on the knees, right? Whereas if it had been, like, Chris, whoever was, like, the gopher, the tech guy, whatever he was, had replaced that. So there isn't that personal connection to make it extra, you know, that this is extra horrifying because it doesn't have that personal bit to it either. So, yeah, it's just nice story-wise and setup-wise and, right, just the right level of gross.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't as thrilled with some of the special effects as you guys were, but they were all well done in the sense that they were excellent for the plot and what they were trying to do. And as Chrissy mentioned, for a low budget film, they were good enough. So
yeah, that was really what I was saying about it. Not that these were the greatest special effects I've ever seen. I was just extremely impressed with them, considering, like, let's put it this way. I was not expecting the special effects to be that good. As you know, I was expecting kind of a step down. And I didn't get that. I thought this was pretty, pretty good for what they had to work with.
Yeah. Yeah. And they did decent for the budget they had. Especially the dog monsters. Those were awesome.
Yeah, I like those. I like the design. They were a little – the CGI wasn't the greatest. But again, we're not talking, you know, a Pirates of the Caribbean film level budget, right? We're talking, you know, probably something that costs in the very low millions or hundred thousands.
You know what I loved about those skull creatures? They looked like what were the bone things in Kong Skull Island?
The skull crawlers.
That's what they reminded me of, and I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, because that's just, they were reminiscent of that. I'm not saying they did a ripoff. They didn't at all, but it was very reminiscent of that. And I thought those were super cool creatures. And when you guys are done, I have something I wanted to say about the buildup too. But anyway, go ahead.
I'm glad they added the dog creatures too, because up till then, there wasn't really, I mean, you had the demon, but throwing the dog creatures in, shook it up a bit. I felt they were pretty solid. What else did we want to talk about generally? Any specific scenes, Barrett? You got any that you wanted to discuss?
Not specifically, no.
Well, bring one up, you bastard.
How about the beefcake scene?
I'll think of something.
The beefcake. What's the beefcake scene, Mike?
Early on, the demon has him strip on for the camera.
Oh my god! Yeah. You gotta say Drew is a dink, because out of all the stuff he picked that one.
Yeah. It seemed the least nefarious.
Well, the only one I caught was to grab his girlfriend's genitalia, and I could understand why he didn't want to do that one. That was the only other one I saw.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a fair point.
And it makes sense, right? What's the worst that happens? He was planning on controlling the camera, so he's going to be on a tight shot. So what are they see his pecs? Ooh, big deal. The guy's in good shape. It's not like he's embarrassed by his body.
Right. I have to say, for a film, and not that I care to have seen it, but, you know, for those women who are watching this film or listening to this podcast and female gratuitous nudity in films, they cheaped out for not showing the guys wanker.
Dude, I wanted to see. Yeah, but you know what? Honestly, his hands were really not that big, so I'm betting his wanker probably wasn't that great anyway.
Are you telling me they cast a small wanker person to play a big wanker character? That seems grossly unfair to big wanker actors.
Well, all I'm saying is that, dude, it's in the hands. That shit's real. That is not a wives' tale. Trust me, it's not.
What about the guy at the bar that was trying to hit up on the chicks, and then he looks and sees the guy naked on the YouTube with his quote-unquote big wanker, and he walks away in shame? So they lied to us, you're saying, Chrissy?
Well, no, what I'm saying is, just because they wanted to cast that impression that he did have a big wanker, the priest, doesn't mean that he actually
did.
Right. That's all I'm saying. Because, you know, I'm sure that's what they were trying to impress, but, like, from the size of the guy's hands, I was kind of like, yeah, no, probably not. Probably
average. They could always cast a stunt wanker.
A stunt wanker. There you go. Yeah, stunt wanker.
It would not do well.
Yeah, they should have. For all the ladies who say, why do horror films always have the gratuitous female nudity, but none of the guys?
This is very true.
Yeah, they've done a Boogie Nights, right?
That's right. Boogie Nights. That's right.
But what I was going to say also is that one of the things I did like that this movie did is that when the demon first kind of shows up, there's hints, okay, and ready. It's Poe-esque. It's very Poe-esque. The first hint is the blonde hair coming out from under the sheets. But initially, you could almost take this as Maxie's own guilt, right? And as the story he concocts with the girl that he sleeps with is obviously bullshit. So we're not sure right away that this is a demon. And then Chris, you know, the sound guy later has some issues and he feels sick. But then he goes into the bathroom and says, oh, man, I just took some bad shit. So even in the beginning, they kind of leave you a little bit of room for doubt. We get hints that the demon is around, but we're just not sure. You know, the thing with the blonde hair, like I said, it could have been a Poes moment. The thing with Dante getting nabbed in the alley. Dante, that was the drag queen's name. Dante getting nabbed in the alley by the spider-esque growling man, which I love that. That was so very like The Ring. I really just enjoyed that, or The Grudge or whatever. That was really great. Could have been just a vagrant whacked out on drugs, you know? So before the demon actually really shows up, we get these hints that maybe, you know, these things could be explained away. So in other words, if you went into this film and you didn't have any idea at all what was going to happen, you might be like, oh, this is creepy and weird, but I'm not so sure this means demon. Do you know what I mean? And I thought that was kind of brilliantly done, because then at the end, when we do get the big reveal, all of those little things sort of point to, you know, the real demons here are the demons within ourselves. I don't know. Did that make any sense at all? Or do I sound like I'm talking in circles?
Yeah, it should have gone an entirely different route. Like it could have been them messing with him. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, that's true. Yep. You could, yep. That's true. You could have gotten that out of it too, I guess.
So like they were,
yeah, totally
revenge thing on him and just making this look as real as possible to him. So it could have gone a different way, but it, you know, I like the way it went, but.
That's an interesting point, yeah. And you're right, Chrissy. Even though we assumed it was demons in the alley, it could have been just crazy people if they had gone a different way, right? So yeah.
Well, right. And even though it's clear that, you know, the crazy dude in the alley is growling and all this like some sort of satanic being. You know, you still don't know that, because if you get somebody that's really crazy whacked out on some super bad shit, you know, they can growl and sound like animals too, you know? I mean, one of the earliest, even if you think about it, one of the earliest, Nathan would know more about this than me, but one of the earliest things they talk about in terms of, quote, demon possession is that some of these people just have they were either whacked out on some kind of substance, or way back in the day, they might have actually had a mental illness, or, you know, a mental whatever, where they were having seizures and stuff, as particularly back in Bible times, trichinosis caused madness. And very often, you know, people would think, oh no, this person's possessed by a demon. Hence the whole idea, don't eat the pork, right? Because the pork will possess the person. Well, really what was going on is that pork was very often infected with trichinosis. And if you look at the manifestations and the symptoms of trichinosis, you know, it sounds a lot like demon possession. It's foaming at the mouth. It's, you know, growling and thrashing around on the ground. It's saying nonsensical things because the person's brain is no longer working properly. It's, you know, jolting and writhing and stuff like they're possessed. So, I mean, I don't know. Anyway, I just went on a big giant tangent and don't even know where the fuck I was trying to go with it. But whatever, that was just what I was saying. So
no, and that's a fair point, Chrissy, because even the original movie, The Exorcist, in the novel that it was based on by William Peter Blatty, they discussed that. I mean, one of the famous lines in that movie was, you know, when people acted this way in the past, when he's talking to Chris McNeil, he says, Damien says, you know, they used to think it was demons, but as we got more educated and whatever, we discovered that it was just mental illness. So I think that's where you were going.
Yes, that is absolutely where I was going with that. Yes.
So yeah, that's a good point. And the best Exorcist film of all talks about that. So it's definitely a worthy thing to bring up. Mike, what about you? What other scenes you'd want to discuss? I think, you know what? You know what's funny is that beefcake scene that you called it was when I first watched the film. I got to that scene, and that's when I turned it off because it just seems silly for me. But as the movie went by and we passed that scene, that's when I really got involved with the film. But what other scenes were you thinking of, Mike?
Well, I got a kick out of the line when Lainey comes out of the possession momentarily, and she just, what happened to your hand? She bit off his fingers.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
You, how do you tell somebody you swallowed my fingers?
Did you not know that was going to happen? I mean, I predict.
Oh, yeah. But I just thought it was funny that then she doesn't know what happened to it. And it's like.
Right.
Like, imagine you woke up and you're like, you're looking over at your wife and she's missing fingers. And she's like, what happened to your hand? And she's like, you ate my fingers.
Right.
Ah!
Yeah. So
I just got a kick out of that.
That was funny. Yeah, because what happens is that Lane, even though she's possessed by the demon, she's not inside, basically, when it, you know, because some of the exorcist films or books I've read, the demon is the forefront personality, but the other personality is like a backseat driver that knows it's happening and sees what's happening, but they can't do anything about it. But there's other ones like this one here where when the demon's there, the real personality just goes to sleep and doesn't know what's happening. Let's see. What other things we want to talk about? Any other specifics?
I was just going to talk about the demon website. I really liked that. They had this demon website. I wish we had this stuff in real life. Much easier. But they had that demon site where they could look up all the different demon names and everything and put in all the different qualities of the demon to find what they're looking for. That was pretty neat.
Yeah, and that kind of ties in with things. Why don't we kind of jump to the ending? Because that ties in with it.
Yeah, it does. And that was one of those twists that I thought was just really fun, where it was like, that was my website. I was like, oh, that was really clever.
Oh, just, and they hit it. And they hit it right at the open.
Yeah.
So, right. So the twist to this, of course, is that the demon is using them to gain followers, right? To get eyeballs on it.
And it doesn't necessarily care that it kills all of them or not. I mean, it just wants to get followers, and it kind of needs them, a few of them at least, to keep the show going.
And the idea that it's stringing them along to build drama.
Yeah.
It's doing it to get, because it could have killed them from the beginning, but then it wouldn't get the followers. It wants the followers. And it wants the people watching it. And I like that, because of course it makes sense that here is this ancient evil. I like the line where they said, you know, what do you know of God's plan? He says, I was there when he wrote it. And here's a couple of knuckleheads that think that they can completely unprepared defeat a powerful demon. And they are just outmatched from the beginning and being outmaneuvered from the start. None of them had a chance. And yeah. I kind of liked that, because that does kind of make sense within the context of even the mythology. This is not really a priest. This is not someone who's trained for an exorcism. This is somebody who did the exorcism home training kit. The easy bake exorcism. And of course it doesn't work. You know, that the demon has been manipulating them for a while and gives them this online devil's guidebook or whatever it was called.
Demon Meister or something weird like that. I can't remember.
But just the idea that it was lying to them. I did get a kick out of the fact that the first demon they pulled up was Payman, who was the demon from not The Happening, because I wasn't a demon. The one with the girl in the telephone pole.
Hereditary.
Oh,
right. Yeah, right. It was that was the demon from Hereditary. So I kind of got a kick out. I'm sure that was intentional. Yeah. But then what happens is you see all these people who have been watching it then end up getting possessed or turning or something. And it's sort of the start of a new zombie apocalypse, or sort of like the Crazies, right? Where they turn on each other. And so the – what was the country, Phil, with the bike?
Omen.
So they take – and like force his face into the tire as it's spinning on the thing. The wife in Israel clobbers the husband with a crowbar. The cooks in the kitchen – I think it was a Mexican kitchen – you know, turn on their coworkers and assault them in there. And the people in the bar, you see them shoving a beer bottle down someone's throat. And as the credits play, you see these clips, this footage of, you know, this outbreak of murder going on. And this does remind me, and, you know, I will say it every time it happens, of like that ending to The Invitation and then several other movies that have been there of the, whoops, it looks like the cult went win. You know, it's like the apocalypse ends up happening anyway. The good guys didn't really win. And sort of leaves off on that kind of ominous note. And I enjoyed that. I got a kick out of that. But, of course, then there was the big one, and I still don't know how I really feel about it, which is the story of the kid. Right.
The story of the kid. What's that?
Right, what happens with the kid?
Yeah.
Oh.
President's son.
Yeah, he's the president of the son of the president of the United States.
Right.
And he kills his dad.
Yeah, and some of his important advisors as well, it seems, before he gets killed himself, the kid, I think.
Right, and that's because you've been watching his story entirely from his point of view, so you just got this sense that dad was this guy rich guy who had a job that, you know, had to go run off and deal with the board meeting or something.
Right.
He was the president. He
seemed like a decent guy. It's just that, it was important enough that he had to leave the room. You know, he couldn't talk about dinosaurs, but he still wanted to. And whatnot, but yeah, it wasn't just a wealthy kid that felt lonely because of his parents. He was actually the son of the president. So you were saying something, Mike?
No, that was it.
Oh, right. Yeah, and so that's where it should have ended, I think, when we see the president, that whole incident with the president, and I think they should have gone to black there. I didn't like that little thing at the end with Max and Lane and Drew. I don't know. What did you guys think about?
I'd have been okay. I mean, I think the way you're saying it would have been a nice ending. I might have liked that better.
Yeah, because the reason I say that is because the little coda with Drew and all them felt so anticlimactic.
Yeah.
After what all just happened.
Well, and they were really just tools, so we really didn't need to know anything else about them at that point.
Right, exactly. And what was it that Max looked up on his Instagram? I still don't get what he was looking at when he opened it up. Or messages, or whatever the hell it was.
Thought he was looking at everything that was going on around the world right all at that moment.
I don't know.
Maybe they're going to have a part two.
I think it was just showing that this is going through, that it wasn't, didn't just stop there, that it wasn't just these handful of people that were watching that went crazy, that this was a thing that was spreading through the world. I think that's what they were trying to show.
Yeah.
Because it's running through the whole credits.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and even through the credits. Yeah, you're right.
What I got, though, was that Drew kind of smiled, and I thought maybe it was just because maybe their friendship had split up, but the intention was that they were going to kind of get back together as friends.
Right.
Now, maybe I'm fucking totally wrong about that, but that was how I read it. So
what about that smile was Drew was now possessed? Because some of those things through the credits kind of showed, some of them may have just been flashbacks to the rest of the movie, but some of them looked like maybe there was going to be chaos with all them now too.
Maybe he was thinking, hey, we got the biggest show on the planet now.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, right.
Because, you know, success in their little world is more important than people in general.
Odds because of it.
Yeah, interesting. All right, anything else that we wanted to bring up? Any other scenes or specifics that we want to bring up that we haven't?
I don't really have a whole lot anymore. I think I'm pretty good, unless everybody else has other things to say.
All right, fair enough. All right, so before we get into our final thoughts, I guess we can talk about what we've been watching and news and anything like that. What about you, Chrissy? We haven't heard from you for a couple of months.
Oh, God, yes, sadly.
Any specifics that you wanted to bring up that were of interest that, you know, folks maybe that are listening to the show would be interested in checking out?
Well, I did watch the Chinese action-adventure volcano film called Skyfire. Which is the version I saw is on Prime. I actually went ahead and bought it. It is Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom meets Dante's Peak. It's really, really fun. So if you like, now, believe me, the volcano effects are great, but there is a lot of outrageous stuff in it, of course, which could never happen in real life. But that's fine. It's just a lot of fun. So I really enjoyed that. I watched Camp Cretaceous season 2. I just finished that. And I also watched a movie called Don't Leave Home from 2018. That I also really liked. And then I've just been watching Quantum Leap. And so that's it for me watching. For reading, I've pretty much just been focused on reading, you know, the submissions for 34 Orchard. So that's pretty much all I've been doing with that. So that's my report. I'm sorry, it's not more exciting than that. I do have an awful lot of horror movies earmarked, but I just don't know when or if I'm going to get to them. I just get too crazy and I just don't get time to sit down and watch as much as I'd like. So that's it.
All right, very good, very good. What about you, Mike?
I also watched Camp Cretaceous. I think it was last weekend. I just buzzed through the or maybe 2 weekends ago. I just buzzed through the first 2 seasons because they're only a few episodes each, and they're only 20-something minutes each. So it really didn't take that long to get through them. I think it was when we got the big snow was when I ended up watching a lot of it. And it's fun. It is definitely a kid's show, but there are people who are killed off. So it is. It pulls punches a little bit, but not completely. They are building a story towards the third season. I don't know if they're going to end up connecting all the way, because it's the first season happens kind of in parallel with Jurassic World, and I don't know if they're going to end up going all the way and connecting the story to Fallen Kingdom when they're getting there. But, you know, if you like your dinosaur stories, it's a decent dinosaur story. So there is that. Speaking of, I'm kind of going through some giant monster films to get ready for the Great Big Kong versus Godzilla showdown coming in March. And so I just recently watched Godzilla versus Gigan, which is not one of the best Godzilla films, but it does probably have one of the, I think, better battles at the end, because it's a fairly extensive fight between Godzilla and Gyarus, Gojira and Gigan. It's the first time Godzilla bleeds. The human story is shit because it's a Godzilla film, so of course it is. But it was fun. So now I'm just going to kind of continue. And if, for those of you who are subscribed to HBO Max, all the old Showa-era Godzilla films are there if you want to watch them, and you can watch them in the original. I think they're all the original cuts. So, and you can watch it with in the Japanese language as opposed to watching it with dubbed. I'm guessing you could probably do it dubbed as well. So if you're interested in those are there. I've been watching the second season of Servant on Apple TV, which is decent. And we're still making our way through. We're about two episodes behind Discovery of Witches, and I'm still very unpassionately swayed one way or another about the show. It is okay.
All right. That's good. That's good. Yeah. That's speaking of Discovery of Witches, that's the most popular podcast on the Dark Discussions News Network. It's got over 2,500 listeners. It's crazy.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course, when Westworld comes back, that podcast, it'll probably be too. But it appears that all the TV show podcasts are always the best because they have the built-in audiences. It's kind of interesting how that works.
Well, they do. And also, I think with these TV shows now, there's a lot that needs sometimes to be shed light on. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's not like a movie necessarily. I think some of these TV shows get kind of complex now. And so, you know, listeners want to keep up and stay abreast of what other people think of certain.
Right. Well, one of these things, and you know, I've been saying this for years, is that, and the studios are realizing that if you want to keep a show in the popular culture, you need to roll it out a little bit at a time, you know, one week at a time, and give people opportunity to talk about it, to discuss it. Another example, one I forgot to mention, is WandaVision on Disney Plus, which is it's a Marvel series. It's a Marvel Cinematic Universe series. It's with Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany reprising their roles from the films. It is directly connected to the previous films, and it is going to lead into the next Doctor Strange film, which is directed by Sam Raimi. And it's really well done, I think. And the episodes are 30 minutes each, coming out every week. But it is built as a mystery. And it starts with every episode basically being set in a sitcom. Of the characters are kind of trapped in a sitcom, and whether they know they're in a sitcom or not is part of the mystery. And at every episode, it advances a decade. So they start out with basically being in a Dick Van Dyke era type of show, and then a Bewitched type of show, and then a Brady Bunch, and then, like a Family Ties, and then and so on and so forth. And they're moving up. I think the next episode gets them into the 90s. So it gives fans a thing. There's some people completely confused, don't know what's going on, but it gives fans a thing to talk about. And gets it out there among at least the nerd culture, if not in the broader popular culture. We certainly know when a show really hits, as in the case of Game of Thrones, it becomes a pop. It becomes a back when people were actually in a workplace, it becomes that, you know, lunchtime conversation, the water cooler show.
Right, right. Yeah.
And I think that would lend itself then to having a podcast audience.
Right, right. Yeah. Especially when it's, dropped weekly instead of the binge drop, because then people come back to the podcast as often as they come to the show itself. So that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, like, I know one podcast I'm subscribed to. They're doing the Karate Kid Cobra Kai. And the problem is that Cobra Kai drops all of its episodes at once, and they have said we're only going to do two episodes a week. And we will not watch them on a weekly. But the problem is the audience, unless the audience has been playing along, has already watched everything. And then you end up getting to.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's like, you know, they're getting to the episodes 9 and 10 5 weeks later, and you've moved on to other things, and you aren't quite necessarily as interested in what they have to say. And it's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a fair point too. Yep, yeah, yeah, exactly. Because, you know, if it's all dropped at once and everybody binges it over the weekend, you know, all you need technically is maybe one podcast to listen to, or a handful of podcasts to listen to, but different co-hosts for each podcast rather than, you know, a podcast trying to pretend that all right, we're going to release one each week. When, like you said, they're already moved on to the next binge show or next TV show or whatever. So it's a fair point. What about you, Barrett? Any items you wanted to mention that you've watched or seen, read, or whatever?
Yeah, so we just finished the fifth season of The Expanse. Really good season. I think it's one of the better sci-fi shows out there. And I'm currently in a pre-release game I've been trying out called Valheim. it's a survival game, and it's kind of addicting. So that's pretty fun too. That's on Steam on the PC. It's not fully released yet, but it's pretty playable. So
how do you spell it?
Valheim, V-A-L-H-E-I-M. You're basically playing a Viking who's in Yggdrasil, and you're trying to survive. You start with nothing, and you have to get wood, stone, and everything opens up different recipes and stuff like that. It's kind of neat.
It does sound pretty cool. Anything else, Bart?
Yeah, it's like $20 on Steam right now because it's pre-release, and yeah, it's worth trying out. It's fun.
Nice. Anything else?
Nope, that's it.
All right. Let's see. For me, I noticed The Night Stalker, The Hunt for a Serial Killer on Netflix. It's the thing they're pushing right now. So I decided to watch that miniseries. It's basically about Richard Ramirez. And that was a pretty good documentary. I would recommend it. So after watching it, even though I have seen a couple of other documentaries about him on YouTube, this one was really good. So I decided to read the book by Phil Carlo, a real crime writer type thing, The Night Stalker, The Disturbing Life and Chilling Crimes of Richard Ramirez. And so far, that's pretty good. It's my first ebook I've ever bought. And so I'm about a quarter of that done. Then I've been playing Cyberpunk 2077. I'm about to wrap that up, and then I may restart it or play a different game. That's a really good game. I recommend. Once the patch came in early January, all the rumors that folks had heard about how bad it was crashing and stuff, that never happened, and it is actually pretty much fixes everything. I've been watching Big Sky. It just came back. It's a TV show by David Kelly on ABC. Yeah, you've been watching it too, right, Barrett?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be watching this week's episode tomorrow with my wife. It's a serial killer about Montana. That's where the title comes from, Big Sky Country. Private detective's son's girlfriend disappears, and as they're trying to find out where she is and her sister, who also disappeared with her, they find numerous other crimes of various women disappearing on this stretch of highway. And so you have your, I guess, police procedural, even though it's really not, because it's privatized, not police procedural, and so forth. So that's a good show. I recommend. I know Clarice is just starting tonight, I think. So I'll probably watch that this weekend, see how the first episode is. And that's based off of Clarice Starling from Thomas Harris's novels, The Silence of the Lambs books trilogy. Tonight I'm going to watch The Stand. It's the final episode in the miniseries. Thank God. It was terrible. Worst TV show ever, but myself and Barrett, Barrett will talk about that in a little bit when we mention other podcasts, but that's pretty much it. That's all I got. Oh, and Discovery of Witches, I'm watching that as Mike is as well, and I'm enjoying that too. The news is they just finished filming season 3, and that will be the last season. So they're not milking the books like other television shows. So they have these 3 books in the original trilogy, and each season is a different book. So season 2 is book 2, and then season 3 will be book 3. So Teresa Palmer and the guy that played Glass Gallo, both of and probably some other actors too, but have been on like Instagram, Twitter, saying it was wonderful. We just wrapped up. This was a great experience. We'll never forget it, et cetera, et cetera. So that's it. It's only going to be 3 seasons, or series, as the Brits would say. All right, so I guess we can give our final thoughts on this film here, The Cleansing Hour. Let's start with you, Chrissy.
Yeah, I really had fun with this film. I think it's light, it's entertaining. You know, don't expect too much out of it. However, I do think it is a really interesting commentary on social media and the world at large right now. So if you're looking for something fun on Shudder, you know, definitely check this out. It is a really good time.
All right, very good. Mike, what do you got?
Yeah, like I said, this isn't something that is going to blow your socks off. It's not going to show you a thing that you've never seen before or reinvent the way you think. It's certainly not elevated horror. It is just a fun horror movie and a good time. So I recommend it highly.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, yeah, it was an unexpected quote-unquote treasure, I guess. It was a film that I wasn't going to be interested in because, you know, there's so many Exorcist films, it's like, who cares? But as people started saying it was good, and then we suggested it as a topic tonight, and then I finally watched it. Yeah, I recommend. It was a really good film, enjoyable and whatnot. Barrett?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this film. I wasn't expecting anything. You know, it's just one of those films I put on Shudder and hope for the best, and it turned out to be a really, really good film. It's just fun to watch, and it's got great pacing, and I never was bored. So, it's a good flick. I recommend.
Nice. Now, Chrissy, quick question for you. Were you on the Becky episode or Dig Two Graves?
No, I do not think I was on either of those episodes, actually.
Okay.
Why?
Okay. Because I was going to let the listeners know that there's a chance that before March, I mean, before the end of before May 1st, there was still a chance that a couple of episodes would appear with you still on it. So folks like Michelle Barkley, who like listen to your synopsises and opinions, would still get a few of your episodes and whatnot, but maybe you weren't on.
Oh, that's
them, so.
Sweet. Yeah, I don't know what you still have in the queue that I might be on.
Yeah.
I think if that's all you got in the queue, then no, but it's okay. You know what? Time's going to fly and I'm going to be back in May before you know it. So.
Right. And Chrissy will be on the 10th anniversary episode, which is coming out mid-March. So.
Yeah, that's only like 4 weeks away.
That's
know?
Right. And also her interview, written interview, which will be on the darkdiscussions.com website, has already come in, I noticed. And so that'll be up maybe even this weekend. If not, it'll be early next week. So people should look for that and whatnot. So that's good. All right. So a couple of things here. Once again, we're at www.darkdiscussions.com. Email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com and give us your thoughts and opinions on this film or anything else, and we will read your emails on the episode and whatnot. Once again, this is, I guess, a Shudder original is what they're calling it, and it's getting 72% good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, if reviews matter to you, which... slowly they're not mattering much to me anymore. Directed by Damien Leveque, starring Ryan Guzman, Kyle Gallner, and Alex Angelis. Still available now on Shudder, so if you are a subscriber to Shudder, check it out. You may actually eventually be able to rent it elsewhere too, or even disc, because Shudder does that every so often. And I think that's pretty much it. So... I guess since Chrissy will be leaving us for a little bit, Chrissy, why don't you lead us out?
Thanks for tuning in to Dark Discussions, where we talk about everything horror and a genre that is worth discussing, right? Phil, isn't that what you always say? I cannot do this as well as Eric. Thanks for listening to us tonight. Tune back next week when we will have another topic. Good night.
Passengers broke into the cockpit, attacked the pilot, nosedived into a field just outside Mumbai. Authorities have not ruled out terrorism.